day.
Boom.
All right, we're back in the remote recording stage. I am currently, welcome back to the Drunk Poet Society. My name is Taylor.
My name is Felice. Welcome back, guys.
I am currently in a fort. I don't know if you could tell on FaceTime, but it's a little dark in here, but here, I'll show you. I know this is great for an audio medium, but I have, you know, I'm in a sheet fort. So nice and cozy. Where are you? Not in a sheet fort?
Oh, I'm in the faculty lounge of my office at the moment, and that is my couch. But you know, I've been traveling around a lot, you know, mostly to the kitchen, occasionally to the office, the kitchen table. It's very exciting.
It does sound exciting.
Yeah.
So we have we chose, like, not downer, then this is not a downer book, but kind of like timely books, and I have some reference points to bring up later. Like I highlighted a lot of things that are a little too similar to present day circumstances within the book. But we also have a special guest joining us this week.
We do. We've got, you know, like triple distanced podcasting going on today.
Yeah. In fact, I should probably hold on. Everyone smile. I'm taking a quick screenshot. 1, 2, 3. Perfect.
Okay.
Don't know if that was good at all. But please welcome our special guest, Stephen Bailey.
Hi.
Woo. Yay. He has previously been on as well.
Two times.
Oh, right. For a mini-sode as well.
Yeah. Super uplifting episodes also, right? I mean, the mini-sode was fine, but...
Every time I come on your podcast, it takes an immediate dive.
Yeah.
Just right into the sad parts of the, because we did Handmaid's Tale, and then we did Handmaid's Tale, and then we did Headless Horseman, right?
Mm,
yeah. Oh, that's right. Actually, yeah.
That was the second one, right?
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now this book.
I mean, this book is full of some whimsy and stuff. So I suppose we should start by introducing the book that we're using today, which is Ernest Cline's Ready Player One.
Yes.
RPO.
First quick question. When did you guys first read the book / how were you introduced to this book? Felice?
I'll start. Sure, yeah. I read it about five, six years ago. I think I knew that the movie was coming out, and... someone was borrowing my husband's copy because he's had a copy of this book for a while. And so I decided to listen to the audiobook because it was available from Libby, not to, you know, like show too much library love, but Libby's awesome. and I loved it because it was read by Will Wheaton.
Awesome.
So that was really, really cool. But yeah, that was about 5 years ago. I was very happy for a reread. How about you guys?
Steven.
You mean to go first? So I actually did not hear about the book, and I regret not hearing about the book. I wish this would have been introduced to me sooner, but it was the movie. I remember seeing the trailer for the movie, and I was worried because that Adam Sandler movie Pixels had come out, and that was like a video game movie taking all my favorite 80s references and kind of putting them up, and I haven't even seen that movie, but I know it didn't get good reviews. And I love Adam Sandler and all that, but speaking of, I'll go on a tangent here. I was writing down. I was just curious how many Adam Sandler movies I would like if I wrote them on a list. I got to 17 that I would watch at any point in time. So let's shit less on Mr. Sandler.
Great movies.
Yeah, I think so. But anyway, so this book was introduced to me. I only knew about the movie, and I thought it was only a movie. And Felice, I think it was actually you that said, "Have you read the book?" And I went, "What book?" And then I think I probably
listened.
That sounds
like something I would do.
Yeah, and I've listened to Willie Wheat's audiobook probably, I don't know how many times. It's on my phone always, and you know how you turn on your car and something starts. It's always Ready Player One, and I just let it play. So I've listened to it a lot. I've only read it through twice. But I'll probably do it again because I really do love this book.
It's a quick read too, so that is kind of because it's so exciting.
It really does fly. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's really well written, and it gives you enough references. It's like Ernest Cline had spaced out his references that you can relate to just enough in the book to keep you super interested in what the next thing he's going to talk about is.
What about you, Tal?
Yeah, I saw the movie first, and I had a really fun time in the movie, and I think, and then I just read the book for the first time and had a blast. It was super fun, but then just rewatched the movie right after I finished the book, and of course, like, I'm already one of those people where, like, the book's always better, but I was really like, oh, the book's always better. But not that this is a compare and contrast podcast, but I will bring up some notes just like going back and revisiting that as well. But
I
before we jump
like
too
the
far
movie better.
Really,
I know that's the unpopular opinion. That's an unpopular opinion with almost everyone I talk to, but yeah, I mean, the opening car race alone with King Kong is worth that's something that you got to see.
Well, before we get into our differing opinions, because clearly there will be many.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Let's talk about our cocktail. So, Stephen, what did you concoct for us for this one?
We did a gin-based drink, and I know your last episode you said you did a gin martini kind of a thing, but we used, I'm blanking on the name of the gin. What's the gin, Felice?
Empress
gin. It's a purple gin, which is really fun. I wanted this to be a drink that maybe Wade might pick up at the dance club. So we did gin and simple syrup and lemon juice, a little bit of soda, and I put in a maraschino cherry and a couple of fresh blackberries. And what are we going to call this fancy drink?
Well, that's on you. You're the guest.
Mm-hmm.
How about we call it the flux capacitor or something cool like that. There's already a flux capacitor drink. What can we call it? Something 80s referenced.
I was going to call it like the Anorak or something.
We call it the John Hughes. That could be cool.
The John Hughes, yeah.
Dedicate a drink to John Hughes. We'll call it the John Hughes.
All right. Well,
cheers, guys.
Clink, clink.
Cheers to John Hughes.
Clink.
What's your favorite John Hughes movie?
Sixteen Candles.
Yeah. I was gonna say you're asking also someone. I'm just talking about myself here, who doesn't know any like.
You
is
weren't
not
alive
a movie
in
buff.
The 80s. Not that that is a reason.
Well,
that
I like
Steven
I've
and I
I've seen
them.
The movies. Like I've seen the movies, but
you can just say Home Alone. Know. That'll work.
Sure.
That's my fave. Between that and
that's
obviously like Breakfast Club. Anyway. Yeah. That's going to be my job throughout this entire podcast, is every time you guys get rolling onto what you were trying to do, I'm going to pull us back with some weird question. I'm going to keep holding
us down.
Cool,
that's when I mute your mic.
I think that's called derailing, perhaps.
Yeah, that's me. That's me. I hate trains. I derail them.
So, Wade Watts.
Yeah.
Wade Watts lives in the stacks, and we are in, I don't know what year, I didn't write it down. We're in the
somewhere
future.
In the 2040s.
Yeah, and things aren't looking good in the real world, but luckily there was this guy named, someone help me out here.
Halliday. James Halliday.
There's a luckily James Halliday who built the Oasis. Everyone plays in the Oasis. People live in the Oasis literally because it's better than the real world and because even like kids can go to school in the Oasis instead of going to school in the real world. And just everything that you ever needed to do can be done in the Oasis. And so that's where they are. Halliday passes away. He's just incredibly rich. And he and him being just a big fan of video games and everything 80s left an Easter egg in the Oasis that he said whoever found the Easter egg would inherit his entire fortune and the Oasis would be theirs. But it was years and years and years and no one was finding this Easter egg. No one was even finding the first clue or the first key or any of that. And that is the essence of the book is there's Gunters, everyone's on the hunt. That's pretty, you know, that's pretty much the message both book and movie is that is the plot of the entire storyline is they need to find this Easter egg.
Yes. And Gunters is short for Egg Hunters. And yeah, so it's like that. What's happened is how we're all, like when Facebook became a thing and then everyone got a Facebook, it's in this story, it's the same thing. This Oasis has become more popular than all social media combined. And like you said, their entire lives are on it. All their money is on it. How we have video game competitions with people making thousands and thousands of dollars playing video games and opening up their what's it called when they stream their gaming? What's
Twitch?
The name of that? Yeah, the Twitch. How old am I? But that in this book has become completely normalized and it's a part of their everyday life.
Did it make so any right of you guys bat. Think of The Office when Dwight becomes obsessed with Second Life?
Oh, that's great. It's a little bit Second Life-y, except for like this one is actually like the living in there. But I guess, yeah, it's pretty similar. That's pretty funny. But right off the bat, I wanted to touch on this. This is chapter like 0000, so before even chapter one. And like I said, a lot of weird parallels to the time we're in, being in self-isolation. To quote, normally the news feed didn't interrupt everyone's interactive sitcoms and soap operas unless something really major had happened, like the outbreak of some new killer virus or another major city vanishing in a mushroom cloud, big stuff like that. And I was like, oh, right. Like, this is like right after everything's happening, or like this was right after, this was before, I was reading this before self-isolation happened, but after it was becoming a problem, and I was like, oof, we're in. And so as I'm reading this book, you know, self-isolation starts happening and all that stuff. So anyways, I just thought it was a fun line to correlate.
It is appropriate that we read this book now.
Well, and that's, I mean, that's what science fiction is always doing. And the more recent science fiction is always obviously much more accurate. And
a lot less fictional.
I wonder what he thinks about that opening line, Ernest Cline. He's probably like, told you.
I know. And then in chapter one, he makes note of an unstoppable virus as well. So, you know, it is interesting. The more stuff that's written, the more sci-fi that's written, eventually, like, things are right. It's just like you make enough episodes of The Simpsons, eventually they start being accurate in their predictions.
Right.
I think that the enough sci-fi's out there, it's like even Star Trek with the cell phones and everything like that.
And
Apple
yet,
Watches.
You're
everybody
right.
Used their watch to talk on them. Like, come on.
You're definitely right. There, it is like a numbers game, and like, eventually they're going to get something right. But the fact that they're getting it right, that they're thought experiments for their little comedy shows, you know, I'm very impressed by that they've been able to.
I loved all the online school stuff. So as a teacher who is teaching online at the moment. All of Wade's descriptions of his teachers, like, well, this is exactly this teacher, and you know what? I bet his avatar looks exactly like him. Like, he looks exactly like what a history teacher would look like.
Yeah.
I'm like, great. That's whenever I use Bitmojis now on like my agendas and crap, I'm gonna be like, great, cool, all right, I'm in the Oasis, wonderful.
And like, I really liked a lot of that school section, how. You know, it was, they really dove into how it's a PvP zone. So, like, you can attack people on certain planets and you couldn't on other. And Ludos, which was, like, the school planet, was all kind of neutral territory. You couldn't use magic or, I guess, was it
weapons.
Magic or weapons? Yeah, there's just no conflict. And the fact that that was where the first key had been hidden for so long and no one even thought to look on Ludos, I kind of missed that elephant, that element from the movie a little bit. And I liked the race car scene. I thought, like, in terms of adapting it for a movie, it was really fun. I can understand how that the Ludos planet may have been boring translation. But I really enjoyed, like, the kind of character development in Wade where you're – or maybe not character development's the right word, but I really enjoyed the I guess, exploration of his character, how he acts in school, and how he said he was so awkward and didn't like going to school in real life, but now he's in the Oasis, and he can put up with bullies, and he can give it back, and he can walk around school, and he can make jokes, and he's a Gunter, and, you know, like, he has this definitely different persona in the Oasis, but I liked his interaction with other high school kids and how he had total senioritis just like any other senior would have, you know, just like chilling in Latin class.
Yeah, I think with the VR masks, they can tell if you're sleeping or not, and if you're putting up a, so he puts up a, what do you call it, a blocker. I don't know what they call it in the book, but it's like an emotion blocker that he uses later on Nolan, so that he can hide the fact that he's sleeping. I thought that stuff was really funny that, you're right, even in 2040s when kids are at home, they're still trying to get away with whatever.
Yeah.
I
thought the film did a great job.
I'm doing it right now.
I thought the film did a really good job, and there are a lot of things that I think the film did a good job on, but I particularly liked being able to see all of the stacks, because I feel like when you are actually looking at the magnitude of how all of those trailers are stacked on top of each other, it's a lot easier to picture than when you're just thinking of it in your head. Because when I was thinking of it in my head, I was like, how many of them could be stacked on top of each other and have this still be a feasible, structurally sound, like, operation? So the film was helpful with that. But I still liked I preferred the tenacity of the characters and all of the riddles and the puzzles, and I really, really miss that in the movie. Maybe I'll watch it again tonight. I'll probably have the same opinion. But I feel like I missed... That was mostly it. Like, I missed all of those little, like, what do they call it? He kept referring to it as like the quatrain and all of the little like word puzzles.
The fact that they're egg hunters, and in the film, I mean, it feels like they're on an adventure, but you don't feel like they're really breaking down the clues, and you're not spending as much time in Wade's head as he's flipping through all of his, you know, books that he's got on Holiday and on 80s trivia. And he talks about in the book that he would sit and watch. He would download old shows and just sit and watch them and go through and play the old Atari video games nonstop because he wanted the clues so badly. It just felt like in the movie, it's just something that they all do. It didn't feel as, the stakes didn't feel as high in the movie as they did in the book.
The stakes didn't feel as high, and I felt like the riddles were so much easier in the movie. You know, I was like, wow, it really took them 5 years to figure this out. Like, the ones in the book, I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely wouldn't have got that either if I ever got it. But since we're on this topic, and I want to keep talking about it really quickly, and I don't want this to be a complete comparison thing, but I liked this question. So I reached out on Instagram, and at I Want Your Pizza, a.k.a. Michael, his question, because let me just read this comment. Wade in the book is so obnoxiously brilliant and basically perfect. The other characters don't have a chance to chime in, but sit back and stare in awe, whereas in the movie, they split a bunch of what happens amongst his friends, which felt more natural. Wade's obsession with Artemis is also really, really not great in the book. I have my opinions on that, but anyways. I think there was a really missed opportunity to explore the world more and go deeper in the themes. My question is, if y'all had the task of adapting this book to a movie, how would you go about translating it, and what would you want to dive deeper into?
Well, and Michael, that's a great question.
Yeah, I thought that was a great question because it wasn't like, I agree. His point, which I didn't think about the first time I saw the movie and then read the book, was in the book, it's a lot of Parsifal figuring things out. And yes, the other characters have their chance to shine moments, but even like jumping way ahead to like the last battle scene, it's Parsifal who takes down the IOI guy, and it's Parsifal who figures out the first key, and it's Parsifal who gets to the end, and it's like Parsifal, Parsifal, Parsifal. Whereas in the movie, each person had their moment, and even like it was Parsifal in the book who got indebted to IOI and goes and saves the day, whereas in the movie, it's Artemis. And it is cool how it's more split up in the movie, and I appreciate that translation. But it was just interesting. I liked how he posed the question. If you had to translate it, and still knowing you're working within an hour and a half to 2 hour time constraint to try and translate this whole book into a movie, what do you think are the important aspects to bring over, and what's something that you might shift in order to make it relatable to screen?
Well, the first thing I would say is the thing I disagree with Michael on is that he says that Wade is perfect in the book. I don't see a perfect kid in the slightest. When I look at, when I think about Wade, I see nothing but a flawed kid. I mean, he's coming from an extremely poor background. He's been orphaned to his aunt who doesn't care about him and living with the boyfriend there. And, you know, he's not popular in high school. He's not good with girls. He's not the slickest. The only thing that he has really is his ability to keep going towards his goal. He's just relentless. That's like his main superpower. So I don't really agree that he's perfect. I do like that he brought up the angle with the kind of being obsessed with Artemis, but I don't know. We live in a weird time with this. Like, I don't want to be insensitive towards it, but at the same time, like, every kid who's Wade's age has been obsessed with a girl.
Okay, I'm going to pause you right there for just a second, Stephen, because that kind of goes into the other question. So remember, Michael's question is more about translating it to a movie, but Maude also commented, and I just wanted to bring up, because they're the first people who left us, like, real cool comments and questions, so I want to bring them up.
Yeah, they
Maude
both
Garrett,
did a
who's,
good job.
Super awesome. Maude Garrett does a bunch of geeky stuff, and she has Geek Bomb on YouTube. Anyways, she's massive, way bigger than us, but go follow her anyway. but also, really quick fun fact is that I want to keep going on your thought, but I did want to bring this up. On page 63, there was a mention of, did you know that Midnight Oil was an Australian band with a 1987 hit titled Beds Are Burning? And that's actually Maude's uncle, the lead singer of that band, Midnight Oil. So fun little tie-in.
Cool.
So Maude Garrett, she wrote a comment. So she was obsessed with the book. Then she covered it again for book club, and the conversation explored how Parsifal put Artemis on a pedestal and didn't really listen to her, was borderline obsessed. So my question is, how do you feel about the relationship? Is it healthy? What are boys / men learning from it? So anyways, continue, Steven. I just wanted to bring her up.
No, yeah. Thanks, Maude, for putting that on there. Yeah, so what I was saying about that is, like, you know, I think every young kid has been had a crush, and especially, I mean, I can't imagine being his age in the 2040s when, like, Facebook stalking is extremely a minor as opposed to the amount of information that Wade can probably get on Artemis in the 2040s. Because we share so much information now, it's going to keep ramping up. Yeah, in the 2040s, that's going to be extremely dangerous. But maybe at the same time, people's precautions in the 2040s are more than now, to where the security's a little tighter. But yeah, I mean, I think every kid's probably had a crush on someone. And keep in mind that Artemis is extremely famous. She's the most famous gamer, or one of the most famous gamers, in the Oasis. And so, of course, he's got this crush on the celebrity. The obsession thing's interesting. Because in the movie, the way they spin it is they're in the race, he recognizes Artemis, they race, he tries to save her, and that's how they are able to talk and interact in the Oasis. How is it in the book? I can't remember how they
meet
come into
at
contact.
The tomb after Wade has already found the key.
Right, he's leaving it and she knows, right, that's right. And so it's still through the gameplay that they're like meeting in the game, sort of having a meet cute, and then, you know, he's trying to move forward with her, and obviously she's very evasive, as she should be, because I'm sure she's probably having her DMs in the Oasis flooded. but yeah, I don't know. I think it's good to put it in there to remind people, you know, that we all do have boundaries. No matter how much information we're putting out into the world, we still need to respect other people's boundaries. But at the same time, I liked that Ernest Cline put that in there, because it's been a while since I've seen a character have a crush on a girl. You know, like, that was a very 80s thing to do, right? Like, look at all of John Hughes' leading men. They were all, especially, like, something like Say Anything, right? That's the literal him standing outside, putting the boombox above his head, telling this girl that didn't want him at the time that he loves her. You know,
well,
those
Wade
big
definitely
grand gestures
did that in the book, too.
Right, exactly. So that's what Ernest Cline's emulating.
Felice,
is it right or
I know
wrong?
We kinda,
I don't know.
Yeah, Felice, I know we kind of touched on it before, but what were your opinions about the Parsifal-Artemis relationship?
I think the book was particularly problematic because you don't get any perspective other than Wade's. So, like, you get this lovesick boy, and I agree with Maude that, like, he is not listening to anything that she is saying. Like, he's she's trying to be like, listen, no, like, this isn't going to work, and here are my priorities, and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, no, but wait, but I like you, and we like talking. And then he, like, continues to keep, like, blasting her, like, her email and trying to get into contact with her and is not being particularly respectful of that. But, like, you don't know what's going on Artemis's side, whereas in the film, at least you're getting a little bit more from her. Like, you kind of know what's going on. And her situation in the film was different than in the book too. Like, she was at some kind of like rogue collective of a bunch of people that were working together, as opposed to the book where she was just like with her family in Oregon or Washington or something like that. No, Vancouver, my bad. She was in Canada.
Yeah.
But I wish, like, I didn't need a female perspective in the book. Like, it was a book about Wade, which is why it was okay with me that he was like, I'm gonna save the day and here's me doing all this cool stuff. Cause like, it was about him. He was the protagonist. But not a great role model, I guess, for other teenagers.
Well, do you feel that at the end of the book that he's learned his lesson on how to treat a woman that he does have a crush on? Do you
feel that it was redeemed? I kind of didn't understand why she was into him still at the end. Like, they're at the property in Oregon, or again, Washington, I don't remember. They're in the Pacific Northwest, and they're in that garden at the end after everything is over. And she's like, are you sure you still like me? Like, I'm not like my avatar. I'm not perfect. I'm not whatever. And it's like, that was the focus the whole time. Like, okay, so now Wade has to just say like, no, I love you just as you are, and smooch, smooch.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was a little bit like kind of on the nose with that point. And the other thing, comparatively from like book to movie was, I really liked how, when you asked, did like Wade learn his lesson by the end of the book? The thing about the book is that they don't actually meet until the very, very, very end. Whereas in the movie, they meet pretty early on, which I understand for translation purposes. It'd be really boring if you didn't meet any other characters except for Wade until the last part of the movie. Like, also for the storyline that they chose to tell in the movie, they wanted more of a camaraderie storyline. So they wanted them to meet earlier. But Parsifal has... Wade has zero social skills with any females in the book until literally meeting Artemis at the very last second. So I don't know if he's learned any lessons yet. I feel like his lessons in terms of relationships are just starting when he meets Artemis, like in the real world. Because I was like trying to equate it, like, it would be really annoying if someone kept like sliding into my DMs and just wouldn't take the hint, or even when I clearly stated, let's not communicate, stop contacting me, and they kept trying to contact me. That would be very frustrating. And at that point, I think it was an important lesson for Percival to learn not to keep contacting Artemis, and he wasn't learning that lesson. I've had a journal, you know, for instance, having crushes on anyone, and like, I think to myself in junior high and high school, and like writing in my journal, like, oh my God, this boy smiled at me today. And like, you know, it's okay to be a little obsessed, because I think as young teenagers, you tend to be a little obsessed anyway. It's just how you act on those emotions. So the obsession in itself, like him thinking about Artemis day and night and him talking about it and him being the voice of the book, I'm fine with that. That's not creepy to me at all. I don't think that's overstepping any bounds, because I think we all have those crushes that kind of like envelop us when we're younger. But maybe his reaction online and his inability to listen to her was the actual problem in the book, you know?
Well, and yeah, what I kind of relationship that. Can they have now? Like, they bonded over this thing that they were both way too obsessed with. And now, like, oh, cool. We don't need to be obsessed over it anymore.
Wait, why were they way too obsessed? Hold on. Why were they way too obsessed with it?
Everyone was obsessed with finding the egg. So they needed to learn everything that they possibly could about James Halliday and all the things that he liked so that they...
Oh, yeah. I just mean it sounded like you were saying it was a bad thing that they were obsessed
with. No. They were both obsessed over the exact same thing. And they don't necessarily need to be anymore. Like, sure, you can go watch All in the Family over and over again if you really, really want to, and that can be all you talk about. But like, now moving on from there, like, okay, so you're 18 years old and this has been your whole life for the last 5 years. Like, what do you talk about now? Are you a really boring person that you have nothing else that you care about?
like maybe this is... that's I don't know, that's a totally different book, you know, that this book was all about the Oasis, and I think that this story ended in them completing the quest and meeting in person. Now, like, maybe the second book is a romantic comedy, or maybe it's a tragedy, I don't know.
Well, I love that she kept asking him, what would you spend the money on? Like, once you, if you complete this, what would you spend the money on? And he wants stupid shit a 17 or 18 year old would want. And, you know, okay, so taking a step back from this and just seeing, like, what kind of story this is. You know, this is, like you said, it's a quest story. It's an adventure where we have our main character and we watch him go from the little guy to it's almost like Hercules or something like that.
Hero's
like,
journey.
Exactly.
Tale as old as time.
And then their relationship between Artemis and Percival is like a futuristic version of like pen pals that would have been in some, romantic novel from 200 years ago. It's like they kind of Ernest Cline kind of crowbarred that in there. And so, you know, I like that there's so many of these universal, timeless things, like women maturing quicker than men. Artemis is the same age as him, yet so much more mature.
She's a year older, I think, in the book.
Yeah, yeah. And she wants to do great things with the money, you know. She wants to donate it and create infrastructure that helps people. And he's like, I want to go, you know, build a arcade that is just for me or whatever he wants to do.
He wanted that's what he said at first. And then he was like, oh, crap, like, that sounds really shallow. So he's like, I want to build a spacecraft so that we can find another planet, so we can find somewhere else to be, because Earth sucks.
Because Earth sucks and we're going to leave it behind. So there's obviously a lot of immaturity there, and she's rolling her eyes and being very patient with him. But she's at first, what I like about it is that she sees the value in Wade only because he's as knowledgeable as she is, and obviously he figured out the first clue when she was right there. Men always taking something from women, just right there. She was so
close. She had been there. I guess she had known about it for like 5 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, she was playing and playing, couldn't get it. So it makes it seem like he's got some special power. And then, you know, they bond. You're right, they bond off of that and only that. So is the next movie them trying to figure out how to actually...
I think it's Wade Watts being really, really awkward and, like, her teaching him how to be a normal person outside of the Oasis.
How to have human connection.
Yeah.
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 It's, like, never been kissed, but reversed.
The second book is Wade Watts being canceled. Like, it's just everyone. He's, like, Wade Watts goes to jail for all these really inappropriate DMs that they didn't put in the first book.
How did you guys feel about the Wade Watts glow up? Because I kind of hated it.
Oh, the fact that it was like he put himself in a room and he like programmed it so in order for him to go onto the Oasis, he had like work out and he only had certain calories.
His baby weight and got super fit and like, come on. That's not realistic.
I'll be honest. It was an unnecessary story plot. I didn't hate it, but I also was not attached to it and they could have cut it out completely and I wouldn't have cared.
I didn't remember like after reading it the first time, words. But maybe, I don't know. I like the idea though. Like, I like the idea of, in order to get all of your electronics to actually turn on for you to go into the Oasis, you have to get your cardio in. Like that's a good idea. But
yeah, but also
scanning food and, oh man, that's crazy talk.
Bringing that up, there's a few things that I want to talk about that could also be book related that are mainly movie related, but altogether I have questions about this whole virtual reality. And so I guess I really don't like when people set up rules and then they get broken immediately. So in the movie, there's Wade is on a treadmill and he can run in all directions. So presumptively, that means to do anything, you have to run everywhere. And then you see their characters running all the time. And I'm like, come on, dude, no way you're running full force right now on a multi-dimensional treadmill. But then on top of that, then you see them at times fighting and they're not moving, they're stagnant. So it's like, is there a setting where they have to be on like full run mode versus like not run mode? And then on top of that, why why would you ever buy a suit where you could feel like a bullet or like a sword? Like, why would you buy the full body suit where you can feel people punching you? If it's not necessary for gameplay, if it 100% doesn't affect your score, why buy it?
Like, because then you're missing out on the human connection. Like, what if I touch your shoulder and you can't feel it, and then you haven't touched another human for years? Yeah, but what if you
shot me? But what if you stabbed me? The vest doesn't actually, it just vibrates where the stab is.
Yeah, he said it was kind of like getting a smack if you got shot.
Yeah.
But still.
I don't know.
You know, they actually, they are making these haptic suits already. It's really impressive.
That's why I have so many questions. But like, but I guess my main question was with the multidimensional treadmill. It's like in the movie, they open it where it's like, here I am on my multidimensional treadmill, but then other people don't have to use it. So I was like, I don't like, not that they had to go into full detail and explain it to me, but I just don't like when rules get set up and broken all the time. So I'm like, I would have liked just like a one liner where it's like, luckily I'm on easy mode where I can just stand here and fight.
But then everybody would be fit all the time if you're essentially like running and doing like shadow boxing
and wearing 50 pounds of haptic gear, you're weighted down. Yeah, weight should have been ripped already.
I think this is a, really quickly, I think this is a good time to take a quick break, have a little ad break, take a sip of your drinks, and then we'll be right back to discuss more Ready Player One.
Hello, and welcome back.
Welcome back.
I'm still
all
here.
Right, what? Oh, great. Darn, I thought we dropped him. Okay, yeah, Steven's still here.
Cool. Yay.
So we've talked a lot about Artemis and Parsifal relationship. I want to get into, what did you find exciting, fun, action-packed wise? What references did you love the most? What about this book excited you? Because I had so much fun reading it.
Steven, why don't you go first?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, the 80s, I've always loved the 80s. I've always, 80s music alone. If you only gave me one thing from the 80s, if you just gave me the music, I'd be happy. In the movie, it opens up to Van Halen jump, and I was like, oh, I'm in good hands here. And no, the movie's not perfect, but it was my favorite movie that year. So I mean, the whole thing that they're doing is everything I like. You know, I love the old video games. Like I am the person who has, you know, the actual Super Nintendo, not one of the new ones that got made where they're all uploaded. I kept all the old games and the old Nintendo and stuff like that. I really love that kind of retro, what do you call it, nostalgic culture. I've always been that way. So this was like right up my alley as far as just the nonstop references. I mean, I love going online and seeing like the YouTube videos or whatever, where it's like all the references in Ready Player One. It's like a 20-minute video, because there's just so many jam-packed in there, and it's the same with the book. I don't know. I loved it all. I love the stuff, you know, they talk about this movie called Lady Hawk, which I've never seen that. But it's, you know.
Now's the time, man.
Now's the time. Yeah, I got time now. yeah, but little references that of things that I didn't know. And I was born in 80. And... So a lot of the sort of remains of the 80s were around when I was a kid. So I guess I've always looked at that as like the starting point of where I came from. And so I always try to look at that and absorb as much of it as possible. I love that stuff.
But you, Felice?
I loved very many things. I agree with you. I think that it was so exciting and so fast paced. I mean, it's, I don't know how long it is, like 350 pages. I don't know. I read it in like a day. But that's where we are right now. I'm pretty sure it was spring break, whatever. But I loved the movie retellings, because when, I know that Steven will agree with this, when I was a kid, if you had a VHS for something, you would watch it over and over and and over again.
Yeah,
and there are so many movies from my childhood that my husband and I could annoy each other with, because they're probably not the same movies that we both know all the words to. But I could be thrown into a situation like all of those gates where he would go in and it's like, oh, well, now I'm playing this person in War Games, or I am Arthur in you know, Monty Python. Like, that to me was just the ultimate. I loved every single second of that.
If you had to do a level like that, which movie would you excel the most at from the 80s, okay, do you think?
Are you? Oh, I was going to say, are you giving us parameters?
Ooh,
of like,
I might say 90s, a 90s movie. Okay. We'll 80s movie. It. 80s movie would probably be Princess Bride. And honestly, okay, that would have been a great addition to this book. Like Princess Bride, those references would have been golden. Princess Bride, I could probably
you're right,
jump
not
into.
One Princess Bride reference.
Yeah. 90s wise, a movie that I watched way too frequently was, if we're not going animated, probably Clueless is a movie that I could like line for line go back because I watched it way too many times. I was so embarrassing. I had a VHS of that, and on the cover it had the word sex with a question mark next to it, and I moved the sticker that was like the price sticker to cover it so my mom wouldn't see it when I was like 11 years old and definitely should not have had that movie. But I think that that's probably one that I could jump into. Maybe, I don't know, is Center Stage a 90s movie? Probably. I could do that one, too. What about you, Steven?
Center Stage. For me? No, I want to hear Taylor's first. I'm putting Taylor on the spot.
I was trying to really think of it. So I'll be honest. I just cheated and started looking up some of the top movies from, like, so I was born in the 90s, you guys. So my list might be a little different. But one that I strictly remember, and this was 2003, so this doesn't count, but I 100% could do it for School of Rock because that was one movie that I watched 5 times a day, not even exaggerating, on repeat, in my bedroom. That was just my jam. But I was looking through this list, and probably Groundhog Day is up there for me. I saw that many, many, many times.
That's a classic.
Growing
up. That's a great
movie.
So
I could probably muscle my way through that challenge, probably get a few points off. Oh, never mind. 10 Things I Hate About You, 1999. I could 100% do that one. Yeah.
What was I just watching? Someone, it was like a kid watched it, and they go, wow, Shakespeare really stole a lot from 10 Things I Hate About You. So stupid. Yeah, seriously. I think my favorite 80s movie, if I was going to act out that, it'd be a tie between Big or Top Gun. But since I feel
Big's
like
a good one.
This is more of a Big, yeah, I would go with Big. I could probably do that entire movie. Yeah, and then I was going to ask you guys, what's your favorite 80s song? And then what's your favorite classic video game? Those are the two things I need to know.
Okay, Dead Man's Party.
Okay, great.
Dead Man's
Oingo
Party.
Boingo.
For sure. And Donkey Kong Country. I brought my, so speaking of Super Nintendos, I brought my Super Nintendo over to my house from my mom's the other day. And I gave it to my little sister because I'm benevolent. But I hooked it up and I played some Donkey Kong Country, and which was our favorite game growing up. Might be the only video game I've ever beaten because I probably haven't played a video game really since then, except for now. Because life is weird, but I was disappointed that I remembered like the graphics were so good and like they're not,
they're
or
not,
like my
no.
TV is just too good now and it just can't process it. But
well,
it was
and then
still
because
so
it's widescreen,
fun.
All of our TVs are widescreen, so it stretches
like,
the pixels out in a weird way.
Do you remember on Donkey Kong Country the level where you're riding in the
coal mine,
the boxcar? Yes, yep. I still had muscle memory of how to like kick
when
ass on that level and
yep.
when to get all of like the the swordfish in order to go to the bonus level. And,
oh yeah.
Oh man. Oh,
how
God,
the tires feel
great.
When you jump on them. They mm-hmm. how they figured out how to get your senses to feel the rubber is
and
really
you
amazing.
Have to like jump a little bit earlier than you're expecting to. Like if I'm playing
right.
a game on the Switch or the PlayStation or something, it's immediate the reactions.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
if I'm playing it on the Super Nintendo, it's almost got to be like just a little bit before so you can make sure that you're going to nail it. Oh,
but
man.
You got so used to it that like you knew that was the timing of the game for sure. Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, for me, it was probably Pac-Man. Like I played a lot of Pac-Man
num.
I also got like the little, the one that you could just hook straight into your TV.
Oh,
and like
the
I had
joystick?
I had a tiny little TV like in my
with
bedroom
the red, yellow, and
all I had was a VHS white. Player and like a Pac-Man game, and that's what I did.
I mean, that
time,
was a great part
so
of the
you
film
were born
too.
In the 90s, but you lived in the 80s.
well, I
had two
siblings
that
were born in the
80s. I think that's what happens when you're the youngest child, is you are whatever, like you see whatever media gets handed down to you from your older siblings. Mm-hmm. So for me, it was like whatever Shannon and Casey were watching and consuming, that's what I did.
Hey, based on childhood pictures, it looks like my little sister grew up in the 80s because her bangs did, so
yeah,
you know. She would probably lie and say that she lived in the 80s.
And Taylor, what's your favorite 80s song? Do you have one?
That favorite song's hard because I listen to a whole lot of music, but I just did a quick scan through my Spotify playlist because I usually have them by like time periods or genres or whatever. And on my running playlist currently that I've been listening to a lot of has been like Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Oh, Def Leppard.
Yeah, and then also Dancing in the Dark, some Springsteen. Oh, and then also
get away from my Springsteen.
Also, when I got my first ever iPod, I had two songs on it, and because I couldn't figure out how iTunes worked, and it was Smash Mouth's All Star, but also Glory Days by Bruce Springsteen, and that was weeks. That was weeks before I figured out how to put any other song onto my iPod.
You know, I forgot about Africa, so maybe it's a tie between Toto's Africa and Oingo Boingo's Dead Man's Party. They're both so
All right, Stephen. Quick, what's your answers? Then I want to get back to the book.
Favorite game would be Super Mario Brothers 3, and favorite song would be Purple Rain by Prince.
Prince,
solid.
I mean, you get to fly in Super Mario 3, so I say that's probably a win there.
So I want to say one of my favorite things, kind of related to this, of the book was the side quest where he went into the deserted bowling alley pizza place and plays just so much Pac-Man and figures out all the different levels and like knows all the little hidden corners that he can go to. And then he wins a quarter that he doesn't know what it is. And I prefer how he got his extra life in the book way more than how he got it in the movie.
Oh, I was just going to say, did that happen in the movie? It happened differently in the movie? Okay. I will. Greg will be thrilled that we're going to watch this tonight, so don't worry.
But in the movie, it was handed to him by whatever the guy's name is.
The
butler at
Simon
the...
Simon Pegg's character. It's Ogden's butler character.
At like the library place?
Yeah, at the library. It gets handed
to
him.
Well, that's where he found the Pac-Man, isn't it?
What
he
was
went
his
to
name?
Like the
what
library?
Was the butler's name? Jeeves or whatever?
Yeah, whatever it is. But I really liked that whole scene because even I was trying to figure out how he would use the quarter later. And I think you could guess that it was going to be an extra life. And the minute you realized that everyone was about to die at the end because of like the big detonation, I was like, oh no, Parsifal's still around. Like you could kind of sense it. But it was very cool. And I liked that little side quest because it's so reminiscent of those old games where it's like you can play all these little side quests and there might not be a rhyme or reason to it that you think of. But even I liked... the little Easter egg where it was like the coder's like name in the game that he was playing, whatever it was.
Adventure?
Yeah, an adventure where it was like he knew about that little hidden space, and that was also in the movie as well. But
which is great because that's actually true.
Yeah, and I liked the accuracies.
Maybe that's what
I looked it up. His name was Curator. It's Curator.
Well, because it was a museum. That makes sense.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I liked that side quest. And then I also liked the... do you remember the games where you would just... It was nothing but type. So you'd be like, walk downstairs and be like, you found a light switch. And it's like, turn on the light. And it's like, you found a sword. And you just keep typing. And there was... Like, I've played only minimal amount of that game. There was also one on homestarrunner.com. Which, if any of you remember that.
Yeah.
But there was a similar game where you could play that with, like, the Homestar Runner character. So I played that one a lot. But I loved that chapter in the book when they were trying to find the key. And they had to go through that quest. And they had to have played that game so many times in order to know where to get the trophies to put the trophies in the trophy case. So that was another one of my little favorite moments. Like, I really specifically liked how detail-oriented some of those quests were. And I think that was maybe the essence that I was missing from the movie. It wasn't that it needed to be directly translated. It was that so much care and thought went into the quests in the book. And they were so highly specific. And, of course, they couldn't be translated into an hour and a half, two-hour film. But it was so enjoyable to read how everyone got through those quests and how everyone did it slightly differently as well, and how everyone's knowledge of the 80s was slightly different as well.
Yeah. As it would be with I mean, yeah, and I think I already said it, but yeah, my favorite parts were when he was digging into all of his research and he had his book on holiday and he, with every single reference that Holiday would have ever watched or listened to or what games he would have played. I love that he was, but again, it goes back into that obsession thing. He's obsessed with everybody that he sort of looks up to in that world, but probably because he wants to be part of that world, and he's just a number. He's one of a billion players that are on the Oasis or whatever it is.
I also really liked the reveal that, you know how it's always kind of the trope where it's like, oh, the really hot girl in the game is going to be like a 50-year-old dude named Chuck. And the reveal that H was actually a female, where it was kind of the reverse, where it's like the strong kind of like masculine H in the game ended up being, what's her real name? Obviously, it starts with an H. Helen.
Henrietta?
Helen Harris. From Atlanta. She's from Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, and I thought that was kind of a cool gender swapped reveal type of situation.
Lena Waithe, who plays H in the movie, probably my favorite actor in the entire film.
Yeah.
She's so good at it. Especially in the early parts before you know who she is when they're in her workshop and she's fixing Artemis's bike. You know, because she makes her avatar this hulking, you know, monster person, to where of course you would think the vocal you know, changes her voice to be more of that tough guy troll.
What's your thoughts on changing Irock's character from the annoying wannabe dweeb kind of person who's like, look what I found, and comes into like H's chat room like all proud of himself for figuring something out that all the other Gunters had already figured out, into the TJ Miller character in the movie, where, you know, it's kind of this comedic like dark lord person who works directly with IOI.
I love the movie version better. TJ Miller really brings something to that character, because he was just this kind of nothing. He really didn't add anything. Like, if in the book he would have, I don't know, I they work differently, because the movie, you're right, the movie is so different from the book that it's apples and oranges at that point, to where which version of that character is better. They both serve the storyline in both.
I don't even remember. I gotta watch the movie again. I remember being annoyed with, I mean, Irock is annoying in the book. That's really about it. You're just like, why is he here? Bye. Like, nobody wants you here.
I do appreciate that they made, like, Daito and Shoto younger, and they didn't kill off Daito then. Because was rough. Yes.
That was rough.
That was
sad. That
was so sad.
That was so sad.
Yeah, I agree with that. Here's an interesting thing. So the book copyright was 2011, and that is the same year that
oh no, Stephen paused right as that is the same year that
I know, and he's probably still recording.
Oh no. Okay, well, we'll see how this works. This might take a little editing.
Oh no. Right. Oh, okay, maybe we should pause.
All right, we're gonna,
all right, we lost,
we're
Steven.
Gonna figure this out. Pause.
Yeah, we'll pause. Okay, welcome back.
Yeah, we're back. That's my bad. Okay, so just jump back in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just jump right back in, because you left us on a cliffhanger.
You did.
Right, so the cliffhanger was this. I mean, the copyright on Ready Player One, the book, is 2011. And that is the same year that Steve Jobs passed away. And I thought that was pretty ironic, because the character of James Halliday is obviously based upon the Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak sort of relationship. Especially in the movie. They really played that up in the movie more so than the book. But it's in the book, too. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, you
thank
two
you for
seem
that fun fact.
Thrilled
I was
going
to say, I was expecting it to be something really riveting. I was like, oh, no, his phone died. It's going to be so exciting.
Yeah, I think maybe
that
the
was
pause
riveting.
Really it hyped it up a little too much with that pause.
I think listeners are going to be like, holy cow, that guy really...
They're not
going to
get the 5-minute pause in between, so it might be better.
It might be better. True. It might be better now. And did I have anything else? Oh, yeah. And then as far as Ernest Cline talking about a sequel in December 2017, he did say he was working on one. And I think he's probably got a lot of time to sit down and write. as of now. So
interesting. So maybe that'll be our rom-com or disaster novel about the relationship between Parsifal and Artemis.
Actually, I've seen so many tweets about from readers about authors who have like taken a really long time to put out books that are like, wonder what their excuse will be now. Like, super sassy. Like,
It can't be that different for like professional for writers. Like, you know, like it doesn't matter if they're quarantined or not. They still have to do their art or their work the way that they do it.
But
you know,
can you imagine like George R.R. Martin, for instance, he was one of the particular people that was like getting a lot of this directed at him. He's doing a lot of stuff. Like, I'm sure he's in engagements and he's signing things and like he's so very important that he's definitely not writing the last book that I desperately want to read so it's different than the show or something. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But
how much pressure does he have now that the show finished and he's like, well, I can't finish it like the show.
Oh my God.
You think he's
going to
finish it like the show?
No. He already said that like if this book gets out, he doesn't say if, I'm saying if. He says, like, when the next book comes out. He did it differently. But, you know, maybe he'll, you know, never do it. He's at home listening to us right now. Oh, my God, that'd be hilarious. But he's at home listening to us being like,
hi, George.
Those crazy, crazy people. It's not happening. I'm going to finish my 1,000-piece puzzle because I'd rather do that than finish a series for a beloved, you know, group of characters. It's fine.
Feel so much pressure. That's crazy.
I don't think he cares. Like, he's killed so much. I don't know if you guys have seen the memes of like Game of Thrones books where there's post-it notes for every death and it's just like
that sounds great.
Like, you can move your hand down the side and it would make noise. There are so many people that die in those books. He doesn't care.
Final thoughts on Ready Player One.
Final thoughts?
Yeah, we'll shoot it over to you, Steven.
Yeah.
Final thought is, I mean, I'm glad Ernest Cline wrote this. It seems like a book that there should be, like, 10 of these. And there's really kind of only one like it with this sort of playing with virtual reality and giving us so many pop culture references to where it's equal parts nostalgic and futuristic. You're right. There are some problematic characteristics in the characters, in particular with Parsifal, but I don't know. I really like it. It's not quite a coming of age tale, but it almost is. And like you said, it's very timely right now to read this, and sort of just a reminder that it's not about the technology, it's not about the big picture necessarily, but it's more about the relationships we have between each other.
Oh, nicely put. Felice, about you? Can you beat that nice bow for us?
I think that it was a very beautiful love letter to the 1980s that Ernest Cline wrote us. And it really made me reflect on all of the things that I would be obnoxious and put into my Easter eggs. And it would be a lot of like TGIF on ABC. And like dumb Disney movies, like a Goofy movie would be one of the movies that they would probably like. If this was about me, they would have to jump into a Goofy movie and be able to do like all the dance moves at the end, in the eye to eye dance and stuff. So I thought it was lovely. It was definitely, for all of its faults that we definitely played on, they all stem from the fact that it's from the perspective of a teenage boy, and Taylor and I say this all the time, like, you only know what you know. Like, if that's the only thing that you know, that's the perspective that you're going to be able to see. You're not going to be able to, and that probably was his point. He wasn't trying to make us see how teenage girls thought during this time, or what the fruition of this relationship was going to be. Like, it was about Parsifal, which is why he's the winner, which is why he does everything best and figures all this stuff out. But it's not only a page turner, but you're right, it's kind of like nostalgia porn, where it just gives you everything that you're looking for, especially for a beloved decade, a very flawed but beloved decade.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think everything that you guys said, I think that's definitely the reasons why it was entertaining and engaging throughout the entire thing, is that you're just like, not only are you following characters and a storyline, but you're also just kind of reliving some of your favorite memories. And again, I know I'm from like a different decade, but a lot of these things were still really pertinent to me because I grew up with these movies and with these songs, and I loved like the song lyrics, even like, oh, the dumb IOI guys didn't recognize this very obscure lyric from this one song that came out in 1980, whatever.
It was like Rush or something. Yeah.
And I really loved those moments. And you're totally right, Felice, where it's like, it's from the perspective of a teenage boy, where, you know, maybe if this exact same story was told from Artemis's perspective, maybe like, you know, she would have been like, yeah, and I left that clue for like Percival to find or whatever. Like, you know, it's kind of that you only know what you know. We're reading this book as if this is what exactly happened in Percival's lives, we still have an unreliable narrator in the sense that this may have not been exactly the way everything unfolded. He may have not been the badass that he claims he was, but you know, this is his story and I'm just going to take it for the fun that it is. And in terms of like the whole relationship between Percival and Artemis, I maintain that he is just a very socially awkward boy who doesn't actually know how to treat anyone in real world scenarios. He has only ever lived his teenage life online. And that's why, like, if there was a sequel where he's in a relationship with like real world people, it would be so clunky and awkward, I would imagine, because he's only ever lived as Percival in the Oasis, you know?
Right. Imagine him getting worldwide fame from being the kid that did this, and then he's this awkward boy is shoved into the spotlight. He doesn't even know how to talk to one person. How's he going to talk to the 30 people that rush him to ask him how he did it and tell his story? And
yeah,
how is that going to? You're right. How is that going to work on his relationship with Artemis?
It's fine. He'll be on the ISS, so like it doesn't matter. Like he's not going to be around.
On top of that, like not only was he in an abusive relationship with his aunt and her boyfriend, but now they're dead. So he really has like no one. He just has a whole bunch.
He was more sad about his neighbor, though. He could give a shit about his aunt.
But like
her boyfriend.
He lost every like person that he grew up with, and it wasn't necessarily the people that he cared about, but it was like still the people that like kind of raised him in a sense. And now he's rich, so it's like imagine what kind of like screwed up kid he's gonna be now at 18 years old, who just stepped out of the Oasis and is like a multi what billionaire.
Just think of Blank Check. I feel like that's also a great 90s reference. Think of the movie Blank Check, and then I can imagine his house. Also a Macintosh reference, so there you go. But with
really
like
quickly,
the slide that goes from the house into the pool. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to end, or not end, it doesn't have to be the end, but I want to say one of my favorite quotes that I highlighted because it's such a dad joke and it made me giggle when I read it that I highlighted it. So to quote, a dude just ahead of me in line actually had a top of the line miniature Sinatra Oasis console concealed inside a prosthetic testicle. Talk about balls. That was it.
That's a classy one.
Talk about balls.
Let me see. Is there...
Well, we can also go into rating, and you can, if you think of anything, add it on there. So we're going to rate the book and the drink. I think because, Stephen, you are our guest, we'll give you a second to think about it, but you're going to give us the rating system for the drink, whatever that shall be. And Felice, if you want to come up with a number, I'll come up with a thing that we're rating it with of the book.
Okay, so a number that's like not connected with anything. That's fine. Let's go at 37.
We're going to go with 37. We're rating the book out of 37 Pac-Man ghosts.
Ooh, okay. All right. So normally we start with the drink as far as our rating, but if you're not ready, Stephen, we can start with the book.
What do you need me to do for the drink?
It has to have a rating system. What are we rating it out of? How many of what?
Out of 5 Mario mushrooms.
Okay.
5 Mario mushrooms. Oh.
You can divide those into quarters and halves.
Oh, no, I'm giving it 5 Mario mushrooms. This is my ideal cocktail. It's citrus. It's not that sweet. It has gin in it. And I actually and omitted mushrooms. The club soda because the only clubs... we already read that book, Stephen. the club soda that I had... that I had made in my soda stream was only grapefruit, so I didn't put any club soda in. But no, this is a great cocktail. I have a feeling Taylor will agree.
Oh yeah, it's 5 out of 5 for me too.
5 out of 5.
I was just saying in our 5-minute break when Stephen's phone died that this drink, like when Stephen proposed this drink to us, I was like, oh, I've been drinking this like every night anyway because we got fresh blackberries. On our last grocery store run and had a bunch of them. So I've just been like muddling blackberries and gin with like soda water. So I was like, yeah, no, this is just my normal thing, just slightly earlier than what I typically drink.
A little so earlier, a little lemon juice added.
5
I mean,
out of 5
it'll be
for
5
me.
In like half an hour. It's fine. It's a quarantine 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to get extra with this particular cocktail, you could splash a little blue curacao in it if you wanted it a little bit sweeter.
That's true. What would you give it, Stephen? How many mushrooms? No, how many mushrooms the cocktail? Drink.
Oh, well, 5. I mean, I'm giving my own thing 5. 5 mushrooms, and I give the book...
Out of 37 Pac-Man ghosts.
33 Pac-Man ghosts. I'm going to say I'm keeping 4 off, not because I don't really enjoy this book. In my opinion, I think this book is kind of like... a must read as far as like books that are fun to read that like Felice said, I like that you called it a page turner. It's not riveting. It's not like the Da Vinci Code makes you like, it makes you turn the next page, but you just want to keep turning the page because it's a fun read. So I'm going to say that, but it's not that it doesn't have some points where the author goes so left field that you're like, how did we get over here? Can we just get back to the main track? But I can't wait for the sequel. So yeah, 33
ghosts. 33 ghosts. I'm gonna give it just a little bit less. I'm gonna give it 31 ghosts. Cause that's a prime number and that makes me happy right now. But, I have told almost everybody that I know, especially in our age range, in like the millennial scope of the world, that they should read this book. I imagine if I had any Gen Xers in my acquaintance, which I don't really think that I do, not by my own fault, I would tell them to read this book also, probably because they would like it more even than we do. But
I'm curious about that, if they would resonate with the references, because this is so reference heavy.
I'm sure it would, with Gen Xers, it would references would be even heavier than they are now, because they probably have
Gen
seen...
Xers.
Like,
I thought
yeah,
you were
Nazi.
Saying
the no, screw us. Them. No. the Gen and Zers, they've got... They can, you know, read books to each other on TikTok. That's fine. But this, I think, is... I'm interested to know maybe what some Gen Xers think. But I pretty much only give a perfect score to a book that I will read lots and lots and lots of times, or I would literally recommend it to every single person that I have ever met in my life. And 31, taking off 6, it's probably still maybe more than I should take off. Yeah, it's kind of a B. Because there are some things that are problematic about it. But I really enjoyed it. There are many, many people that I have made read this book, I guess including Steven, so you're welcome. Or sorry, I don't know which.
I gave it 30, whatever I said. That's
33.
I guess mine's a B+.
Yeah, you could round up because you're at like an 89 point something. So if you wanted to give it an A- you could, but it's also that B+ range. Or you could be the stickler teacher who chooses.
Give it an
A-.
Give it an A-.
I think if he does one more draft, we can bump it up.
with your notes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I have plenty. So.
I was gonna actually go right in the middle of you guys unintentionally. I was gonna give it a 32. Because I liked 32 because I just did the calculation. It gives it a B+, but it's not right on the cusp where it's like, nah, dude, you didn't do an A-, but like you're a solid B+. And I agree with Felice in that to get like a really high or perfect score from me, it has to be one that I'm rereading multiple times and passing it along to every person I know. This one is, I know the people who will really enjoy it, and I know the people who might not. Like they might think it's fine. And I'll reread this one at some point, but it's going to be a while for me just because it's one of those ones where now that I know all the twists and turns, I think going back through it again is going to be like, I kind of know it, because most of the book that really intrigued me was the fact that it was so nostalgic and it made me so happy. And yeah. So I don't need to revisit it right away.
5 or 6 years was good. That's about how much time I just had. Yeah, that was pretty
good.
And it's
really fun. It's a really, really fun book. And also, I give so much kudos to anyone who writes their first book and it's just a hit like this, you know? Mm-hmm. So kudos to authors who can do that kind of stuff.
I don't think I knew that. I don't think I knew it was his first book.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And can we give props to Will Wheaton for, his read.
It was great.
That performance
his read
on that
was
audiobook
great.
Was fantastic.
Yeah, we can at him in our post. That's fine. Also, Stephen, you brought up Da Vinci Code the other day while I was doing a puzzle, because that's what my spring break was like this year. I listened to the all like 18 hours or however long it was of Dan Brown's Origin.
Oh.
Which is a part of that same series with I don't want to call them like the Tom Hanks books, but he plays Robert Langdon in all of the movies.
Tom Hanks books.
But this one was about the whole thing was that this scientist had discovered where we came from and where we're going, like as far as the origin of life, essentially.
Interesting. When did that come out?
Good page turner. A few years ago. So Libby has this very cool thing, and I feel like I talked about this last time we recorded. Libby has a cool aspect where you can look at titles that are available right now that you don't have to wait for. So you can look at audiobooks and you can look at digital copies of books that there are no waiting lists for. And that's why I downloaded it, because there is no waiting list. And I just did some puzzles and I listened to it on 1.5 because I'm a weirdo that
have you guys given all of your tips on the apps that you guys use for...
I think we've mentioned them, maybe not recently, so it'd be worth going through them again.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, there's two major ones that I use.
Overdrive, right?
Hoopla's great for everything on it is available right away. There are no waiting lists. Everything on Hoopla is great the time.
I'd say for our purposes, it's mostly the audiobooks I find on Hoopla. Mm-hmm. And then if we do any graphic novels, you can usually find them on Hoopla as well.
But Libby, I use Overdrive for some things, but I always consult Libby first because I have my library card connected through it, and I can see exactly how many copies of that LAPL has and when it's going to be available to me. Like, my queue right now is really, really long because I have a lot of stuff on hold, but I just started reading Unorthodox, which is an it's a memoir about a woman who left Hasidim in Brooklyn, and it's really, really good. Libby's great. Do you have so? What do you do on Overdrive, Stephen? You use Overdrive more than the others.
So in my books little thing, I have the Kindle app, the Audible app, the iPhone Books app. Which I don't know if people know this, but you can go and you can sample pretty much any book and read like the first 20 pages in the iPhone Books app. It's pretty cool. Hoopla, Overdrive. Let me see what's going on there, and of course Goodreads in there. Yeah, I mean, Overdrive is sort of where, like, all my stuff goes, and that's where, like, I connect to the Los Angeles Public Library. So in there right now, I've got the S.E. Hinton, The Outsiders audiobook. I'm listening to that. I'm listening to One Second After by William R. Forschen. It's a post-apocalyptic book, and Save the Cat Goes to the Movies. So I got some stuff going on there. But, yeah, those are the apps I use. I don't know. I just did what Taylor told me to do.
Good job. Proud of you.
Yeah. Libby tends to be my favorite just because you can put things on hold that are really popular. So like Untamed is a book that's out there right now that unless you want to buy it, it is, you can't get it. I've been on a waiting list for 4 weeks already and hopefully it'll be available to me in a couple. But that's, if I can't find it on Hoopla, I just go to Libby. I suppose I should remember Overdrive. But yeah, I pay for so much stuff that if I can use the library and get things for free, I'm going to try and do that. Unless I'm planning on loaning it to somebody else.
Yeah, I try and use the library. Or if it's like one that I think I originally got Good Omens via library, one of the online apps. And then I ended up buying it because I'm like, I'm going to reread this.
I like having my game in books. There's some authors that I just really prefer buying their books. Not that he needs it. Not really. He could live without me buying his book.
And also, I just read volume one of Sandman, and I was, and that was really cool. So if you haven't read Sandman, that one's also just really cool art.
Is that Sam Keith too?
Yes.
It's a comic book about Adam Sandler, right?
Sam Keith did Sam Keith did my favorite iteration of Batman comic books. He did that, and he did a graphic novel, or I suppose it was a comic book series before it was a graphic novel, on Alice in Wonderland. So if you're if you liked Sandman and you like Sam Keith, I have some things for you.
What if you like Adam Sandler?
Then I'd probably watch 50 First Dates.
I just want to see how many times I can bring up Adam Sandler in this podcast.
It's so funny how when we're recording, I'm just as easily able to not acknowledge what you're saying. When we're together.
It's pretty astounding.
And yet it didn't work. You still needed to be acknowledged.
I was worried that the rhythms were going to be off as we were doing this, and they're not. It's still the same amount of silence after I speak.
Well, okay, so thank you so much for being with us today. Our next book that Stephen hasn't read. Is The Woman in the Window, which is also another book.
Oh, but I want to see the movie so bad.
Of course it's going to be a movie. I didn't even know that.
It is
but,
a movie, isn't it?
It is so appropriate.
Is it out?
I don't know. Never mind. I don't know. I know it is or
it
is going
be.
To be.
It's about to
well,
be.
Well, either way, so Taylor had hit it on the nose when she talked about how this book, the one that we talked about today, and our next one are very on the nose for everything that's happening in the world, because Woman in the Window is about an agoraphobic alcoholic. So we just had cocktails at 4:30 on, what day is it? Tuesday? And have questionably left our homes.
Are you pulling direct dialogue from the book right now?
It certainly feels like that.
Yeah.
So if you enjoy staying in your house and drinking alcohol, first of all, this shouldn't be your first episode of our podcast. Second of all, this is the book for you.
Oh my gosh, if this is someone's first episode of your podcast,
they're not gonna listen
and they don't
anymore.
Know the shenanigans I bring to this podcast, I feel so bad, because you're just gonna see random weird reviews like it was. I liked the girls on it, but they keep having this idiot on there
and they never laughed at any of his jokes. It was really awkward.
I thought he was kind of funny, maybe.
Like, did they manufacture those weird pauses after he talks?
Yeah, I edited them in.
That was in post.
That's behavioral training right there. Well, seriously, guys, thank you so much for having me on, because
I
love this book. I love that movie. And like I said, I can't wait for the sequel. But it was just fun to talk about. Plus, it was, you know, good to have something to do. I mean, I still didn't, like, put on pants for this or anything, but it was nice to have something to do during the quarantine. So
yeah, and I really appreciate that this is a full body. I appreciate this is a full body shot on FaceTime, and you're just not wearing pants. Like,
yeah,
thanks
I know.
For that.
It's awkward, but, you know, well, it's what had to be done.
Where can people find you?
At
on
my
the
house.
Internet. No.
I'm still at my house.
I can give your address if you really want me to.
You can meet me in the Oasis at Shot of Bailey's. Just look me up. I'm at Shada Bailey's on everything.
He doesn't leave the
PlayStation,
bar.
PlayStation, on Instagram, on Twitter.
There you go.
Facebook.
The Facebook. Well,
yeah,
if you want to, if you have questions.
Yeah. I was going to say, if anyone has questions for my silly opinions, they can come ask them.
They can, yeah. Normally people say, don't at me, but you're saying at me.
At me, fools.
At me. Well, you can reach us on Instagram and Twitter at DPS_podcast.
You can always email us, drunkpoetsocietypodcast@gmail.com. You can also leave us cool voice messages on, I believe, in the link in our bio on both Twitter and Instagram takes you straight to our anchor.fm page, and there's a little section where you can click on it and leave us cool voice messages. We haven't got one in a minute. Makes us feel lonely. We'd love to
it
hear
really
from
does.
You.
It really does. Please, right now more than any other time.
But yeah, anchor.fm/drunkpoetsociety, and you can leave us a little voice memo. It could be anything. You could just say hi. That'd
we also awesome. Like cocktail recommendations, because, you know, we can still go pick up our BevMo deliveries. And
also, shout out to both Maude again and Michael for leaving us awesome questions.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We would love to get more of that. And please read Woman in the Window so you can join us for our next podcast and shoot us over some cues, and we'll give you some A's.
Yeah.
Questions and answers for people who are confused by that.
Thanks, Steven.
Yeah, thanks so much.
That's why I'm here.
Anything else, guys?
I'm out of quarters, so I think that's game over.
Awesome.
Oh, game over.
Well, just remember, guys, that it's not drinking alone.
If you have a book.
All right. Have fun self-isolating.
Yeah. Bye. Thanks, Steven.
Bye. Bye. Thanks for having me. Bye.